Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
It's Kelly Clarkson here to talk all things Wayfair, the best place to buy furniture, decor, and anything else you can think of to create a home you absolutely love. I know when I shop with Wayfair, I find options for every style, whether I'm feeling boho or farmhouse, modern, traditional, French country. I can find exactly what I need for my home and more. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
I'm a big sucker for the unlikely friendships stories.
Yes.
Of course, you know, have to compare everything to Stormlight Archive and Brandon Sanderson. Can't have a main character with a man bun.
Are you kidding me?
Terrible. Even hell cowers in fear of the Black Rabbit.
I like that
ending. Oh, I like it so much.
That was a cool way to end it.
That's a fun one.
And he said in his pitch to feel free to use the Scottish accent when reading this.
You got it in you?
Probably not. Welcome back to another Tudor Ramble episode. I'm one of your hosts, Austin.
I'm the other host, Richard.
Today we're being judges. We love to be judgmental.
We just love judging the works of others. If you can't tell from where you are and what we've been doing for 3 years.
Yeah. So we've done this before. We've had patrons and members and viewers all submit first lines for fantasy books and sci-fi books. We've had them submit world building ideas that we've judged. And today we've asked you all, we've gone to Instagram, X, YouTube's, all of it. And we've asked everybody to submit your best book ideas. So a story, people could be a little liberal with this, and it could have been focused on more of back of the book blurb, or it could have been a story concept. We got a lot of submissions, and we narrowed it down a lot because there were so many submissions. We're still going to cover 44 of them. I tried to include as many as possible,
but videos can't be 8 hours long.
They cannot. But we're going to split this into two parts. Have 22 submissions per episode that we are reviewing. However, we are going to give a champion. We're going to give a prize, a winner in each video. So of the 22 entries we judge here, we'll be giving away our three bookmarks. Oh, good. I have them in front of me. That's on our store. So whoever wins will get these. Oh, yeah. It's on tutorramble.com. You can go check them out as well. But we will be giving the winner on each round this. And then at the end of the second video, we'll also be giving a free Patreon subscription or a hat if you're already a patron or whatever you want in the merch store.
Basically, between the two winners, there will be a champion. There can be only one.
Yes.
And that person will either get a three month subscription to our book club over on Patreon, or if you're already a Patreon member, you will get something else of equivalent. You can tell us what do you want and we'll get it for you.
So what we're going to do is we're going to judge these in the way we did in the world building episode, where we will talk about it and Rich and I will both give an out of 5-star reaction of how much do we want to read this kind of book. And yep. Then let's say you give it a 3, I give it a 3, we combine our scores, it gets a 6 out of 10.
Yep.
And so the highest score by the end of this video will be the champion of this video. All right, I think we got also I should mention that any patrons that did submit their ideas are all in either this video or the next one. They had to give them that privilege, mm-hmm. You know, so all patron submissions are included, and there's also others that were included as well. So it's about half and half or so.
Cool.
All right, Rich, we'll go back and forth. Do you want to read the first or do you want me to read the first?
I'd like to read the first.
Go ahead.
This one is from Brendan T, a patron member here.
Yes.
I'm going to read it off.
Thank you, Brendan.
This idea popped into my head while on a call with a friend about brainstorming ideas. What if the Truman Show was in space and was centered around the world being completely in virtual reality? It's about a group of people stuck in a virtual simulation. They are a team competing against other teams in a series of tournaments. Our main group of characters are part of a team called the Drift Squad. They won't realize it immediately, but they've actually been brainwashed, captured, and locked in a room. Their bodies held captive in virtual reality machines. Eventually, they start having thoughts that they should have been having, but they shouldn't be having. Thoughts of where they came from, who they really are. These thoughts have been blocked out by the creators of the virtual game before. But as time has gone on, the thoughts have become stronger. The creators are struggling to block them out. The more the Drift Squad starts to question their reality, the more it's no longer a game about winning a trophy, but instead for survival and coming up with a way to escape the world they are stuck in. The Matrix. But
that's what came to my head.
Team.
Yeah.
Team Matrix.
Maybe Ready Player One meets The Matrix.
I guess a little bit more. Yeah, I like that.
A little bit.
Yeah, the main thing that stuck out to me is I like this more as a group endeavor. Mm-hmm. I think there can actually be some fun ideas of where one individual is maybe more out of the Matrix than the others and has to convince them. Because, you know, with these stories are typically individualistic, and a group setting could be interesting, I think.
Yeah, this is one of those that execution. Well, all ideas need great execution. This could go in several different directions. Does the idea wow you? Was there anything about this being in the AI world and everybody being in a simulation and slowly coming to realize that? Maybe it could go a little bit in the horror direction as a genre. You can get a little bit existential, or it could just, I guess the play on this could also be more of your Fellowship, Brotherhood, the Drift Squad as they start to realize this. Maybe you get more of a, not classic fantasy, but that kind of feel. I could see this being a very typical story structure, as in, hey, squad gets mm-hmm. together, defeats the big virtual reality, or could go another direction of horror.
Could even have multiple genres of resets of the, yeah. you know, the game developers actually resetting them. And so the Drift Squad is still this cohesive unit, but across different genre of games. So in, like, hard reset, they're in a sci-fi world, they're this team competing for whatever have you,
yep.
and they start questioning things, and a handful of them start to realize it. Hard cut, hard reset, they're now in a fantasy realm, and so you could play around with different settings with yep. it, which one comes to the realization first. Maybe they start that kind of thing. Could be
you
fun.
Can play around with it. Yeah, there's a lot of options.
There are plenty of options here for this story.
So what do you want to rate it, Rich? What's your judgment of this book? Would you go pick it up at the store? How much of the book idea will you?
This is one that would I immediately pick it up on just the back of the cover?
That's what we have to judge. Yeah
true. I don't know if it's like my first pickup, but by a good recommendation, this is something that could interest me depending mm-hmm. on execution, because there's so many different ways to do it. I'm going to give it a
3.25. Okay. Yeah. The number in my head that as soon as you finish reading it, it hasn't changed. I'm going to go with 3. I'm neutral. I could see myself reading this one. The idea's there, but we're going, yeah, similar to if I got recommended by somebody, I'd read it.
I'm anticipating some really like out there
to wow us.
Wow
yes.
us. So I'm being reserved.
The first one also almost has to have a 3 because there's got to be room to improve and room to go down.
Yeah.
So that being the case, Brendan, you're currently in the lead with a 6.25 out of 10 because combining our two scores, and that's how the rest of this will work. Brendan, thank you for submitting the idea. Now we have idea number 2. Are you ready?
Yep.
All right.
You're going to read this one?
Yep. We'll just alternate.
All right.
Or we can, yeah. you know, not do that and just.
Could.
You could do the first whole video if you want.
No, we can alternate. Okay. We'll do that.
So this one is from another patron of ours, the Jeremy Renner. Thank you for submitting this. Here we go. In an ancient cosmic feud, planets Arge and Hue wage relentless war over a fertile celestial body, a breadbasket sustaining their conflict. Our story intertwines the lives of Empress Gur of Arge and Commandant Lepton of Hue, who... both concealing truths their people could never grasp. The saga spans generations, tracing Beery, an Argian soldier doubting the war's purpose, and Fowok, a fearless journalist digging for secrets in the wasteland. Their paths collide as hints of a shared origin emerge. the contested colony, once a galactic hive mind, conquered star systems with ruthless unity. Its collective consciousness thrived on expansion, absorbing cultures and resources. When no frontiers remained, the hive stagnated, its physic bonds fraying.
Psychic
bonds fraying. Schizophrenia-like fractures splintered its mind, erasing memories of its dominion. Arj and Hugh, born from the schism, became twin echoes of the hive, their mirrored societies identical in language, rituals, and technology, locked in a war that feeds the hive's fading essence. Ancient relics buried in the breadbasket's core pulse with the hive's dormant will, manipulating leaders like Gurr and Lepton to perpetuate the conflict. Beery and Foak's discoveries threaten to awaken this force, risking either annihilation or a starved hive reaching for the stars. It got deeper the more it went. It started off super generic, and I was going, all right, who's Arj and Hugh and all that? The second paragraph was necessary.
Oh, no.
It got deeper.
Start with that one.
Like, start was very weak.
Okay, just the last statement of, in a way, of, you know, risking annihilation or restoring the hive mind reaching for the stars.
Mm-hmm.
And with the hive minds are almost always like the villains, you know? In this case, a unified hive mind is a good thing. Like that's kind of the protagonist, the good guys on this side, which is cool. I like it. I quite like this idea.
Why in the beginning did it not get you and then slowly started to gain on you? Because did you think it was going one direction?
Yeah, I was thinking it was just, plenty of good stories have just the central conflict of, these two sides fighting over resources, and, you know, they find out they're more similar than they are different. I've seen that before. The second half is where a real interesting idea is. Quite enjoy. I'm leaning myself at a 4. I think this
great
is a great idea. I've not thought of making a whole story about a splintered hive mind where the end goal is maybe restoring the hive mind's unity. It's cool.
And that sentence here of the schizophrenia-like fracture splintered its mind, erasing memories of its dominion. There, and these two societies born from the schism became twin echoes of the hive. They're mirrored societies. They're identical in so many of these ways, but they're locked in the war that feeds the hive's fading existence. Like that I think was the point right there. I went, this is different and unique.
The conflict adds difference and, you know, novelty, which the which the hive mind needs ultimately. Like, that's really interesting. I'm wondering what you're going to do with that concept. Because, like, I mean, that's also a human factor of dealing with the idea of novelty versus security or stability. Like, that's a human thing of how much humans actually crave novelty but often need security and stability.
Yeah,
that's a fun theme to play with. So
yeah that is fun. I like it. I'm gonna be muted though. I'm
You're muted.
I'm gonna say 3.25 above average. I think the submissions here are gonna get even better.
You writing this stuff down though?
Yes, I've got. So I only need to keep track of the current winner. So
okay,
Brendan was just dethroned. Dethroned by now the Jeremy Renner, who has what you'd said 4.
I said 4.
So 7.25 is now the score to beat, and that is the Jeremy Renner. Thank you for the submission. All right, here's the next one. This is number 3 from Ryan Skeffington, who is an indie author who is on one of our indie author collab videos. Go check him out. Ryan's awesome. But do you want to read his?
I will be reading his idea. Skeffington. Title is
Skeffington.
Skeffington. Yep. Thank you. Title, Through Their Eyes. Two retired adventurers, Marla, a war myth barbarian, and Damane, a spectral bard, have 3 children and live peacefully inside a town protected from the Blight. They have 3 children, the eldest, a tank, the middle, a ranger, and the youngest, a mage. One day, the children travel a stone's throw into the Blight to develop their transitional skills. While purging low-level beasts and clearing the spread of Blight, the children are taken. A single piece of parchment is nailed to the town's gate, the symbol of Vondant, a mythical tyrant and source of the Blight. Marla and Damani set out to save their children and finally rid themselves of the evil who cascades the land with the blight. While traveling, these highly advanced adventurers use enemy appropriate skills to fight the horde of beasts, gremlins, and agents of Von Daunt. I think I'm saying that right.
I don't know.
Each scene unfolds through the lens of adoration as they support their lead. While Marla bombards enemies with fists of carnal energy, Damani tells her story and recounts memories of how he fell in love with her. While Damani serenades spirits, Marla witnesses their tenacity while fighting for someone so charismatic and recounts memories of how she fell in love with him. In moments of rest, they both tell stories about their children and how amazing it has been to watch them grow into unique adventurers with their own temperaments, personalities, and skills. To save their children, their love would conquer gods, and we'll see it all through their eyes.
A little bit of romance in there, a little bit of fighting too.
So he does mention in here that it is a lit RPG-esque as a subgenre.
Yes.
So right off the bat, like I just don't know too much about lit RPG other than, you know, Dungeon Crawler Carl.
Mm-hmm.
And even then, so the genre itself is not immediately pulling me into it, but I do like this story set with more of a focus on the romance between this between these partners and all.
Yeah, lover, like protecting from the blight, essentially.
Yeah, and instead of it like a falling in love story, it's just a recounting of how they have fallen in love and, you know, continue to do so, and then a focus on their children. I like that setting.
Mm-hmm.
That's a nice idea you don't see as often, really.
I gotta say, though, so this could be executed great again, but sometimes with lit RPG, maybe this is just from me reading Dungeon Crawler Carl, if you pitching the idea of Dungeon Crawler Carl to me is like, oh, neat. That seems... I'm not wowed by the idea of Dungeon Crawler Carl. It's then you see the series advance and go, wow, this gets much deeper than you think.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure if that's the case. Again, I'm not well-versed in lit RPG, but even this story, I think the idea is, oh, this could work, as other lit RPG could work as well, but it's not... The idea itself isn't wowing me in that way, because...
Just kind of the initial setup of, you know, fantasy realm with D&D type classes that we kind of know, and then a blight and big evil bad guy is just not as hooking right off the gate. Like, it's not that setting and environment is not immediately wowing, but the ideas further beneath are more interesting.
Yeah, I think a lot of lit RPG, sometimes the ideas have to kind of focus on those classic fantasy stuff, because that's what makes it the genre a little bit fun. Again, with the one lit RPG series we read, it makes it fun. So I'm going to say, I'm neutral. 3 stars.
Okay.
I'm neutral on it.
Just because I don't see as many of those type of love stories in fantasy that I would like to see more of, give it a 3.25, above average.
6.25 total?
6.25.
Our leader still is Jeremy Renner. Ryan, yep. Don't hate us. We'll buy more of your books. Okay. Thank you, Ryan, for that submission. Now we've got this, okay? We're going to give it a 5-star. I know it's coming. It came last time, I think, only in the second video. We gave 2 out in our entire last video. Okay. This one is from Mac Porter. Okay, here's Mac's idea. The last of mankind clings to warmth in a world where the sun has burned away and cities are kept alive by artificial suns.
Ooh. Already we're off to a good start.
Okay. Again, so last of mankind clings to this warmth of the world where the sun has burned away and cities are kept alive by artificial suns. Every year, an expedition travels across the frozen wasteland to trade people and resources between the cities still clinging to life. This year, 2 strangers traveling between cities find their paths on a collision course. Lillian Valsere, a noblewoman with blackened scars and a power she doesn't understand, runs from a life where every choice was made for her, a life centered around the family image. She buys her way onto the expedition, chasing whispers of a man who might explain her affliction. Collister Cole, a grieving man scarred by loss, has waited a decade for his chance to leave the past behind, but when his spot among the expedition is stolen, he finds himself walking a darker road. As the expedition travels across a landscape twisted by cold and shadow, Lillian and Collister uncover fragments of a truth long buried, a truth that could unravel the world as they know it. What begins as a journey of escape becomes a fight for survival as the warmth that sustains them may not be what it seems. What do you think, Rich?
I like this one. I think... Ooh. Yeah, no, just from beginning to end, I like the setting, the setup, dual POV story here, them crossing paths. Loved it. I honestly just...
Well pitched.
Solid.
It was so well pitched.
Solid and well pitched. Yeah, exactly.
Because a part of these book pitches isn't just, hey, is the idea cool, but how well do you tell the story of your story?
Yeah.
How well could you elevator pitch this?
And this is a great elevator pitch.
We got the first hook of there being actual artificial suns, and then we get connected to the characters as well. We get a little bit of snippets of one character who has always been doing what she's been told, and now she's going on this new expedition and journey to find out what's wrong with her affliction. We get this other character who his part of the expedition has been stolen. So who stole it from him?
I'm assuming Lillian?
Kinda, yeah. You're assuming that's the tension. Mm-hmm. So you get the character journey with them, and it's larger than them because they're figuring out this artificial sun's dying. And by the way, why is there an artificial sun? What society is this where the sun... It could go so many directions. Is this what kind of sci-fi world are we in? What's going on? I have lots of questions.
Like a dead planet with many artificial suns scattered around this planet with all these different cities. Cool, 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 cool. I mean, I got to give it at least a 4.
Your rating 4?
Yeah, it's a great.
I am
great
also,
idea.
I'm giving a 4 too. Great. Great pitch too. Just great, solid. I think if we see more of that where we get a little bit of character stuff, a little bit of world, and the grander idea, that did all three of those things.
Great packaging of this idea.
Maybe I'm going to... I'll stick a 4. All right. Mac, thank you for sending that. That is Max. Max currently in the lead because that's an 8 out of 10 right now. 8 out of 10. That's a great idea, Mac. Thank you for submitting that. Now we have... our next one, Rich.
Next one, number 5, Benzon from Germany.
Benzon.
All right. The most popular story among the royal capital's children is without a doubt... Yep, and I scrolled too far. The most popular story among the royal capital's children is without a doubt the story of how the 5 heroes slew the Demon King, Slayer of Thousands, and brought peace to the world. The main character tells this story every day in the form of a puppet theater show and is highly praised for his skills. Some say his fingers work magic. One day he is asked to perform in the royal palace by none other than the king himself, who is one of the 5 heroes. After 3 shows and 1 too many drinks, the main character stumbles around the palace and discovers a secret room with a puppet inside it. Not just any puppet, but a human-sized Demon King puppet. Emboldened by alcohol, the main character tries to puppeteer it and discovers that the puppet is no mere tool for entertainment and comes much closer to an instrument of war. The puppet can punch through stone, breathe fire, and is nigh indestructible. The main character is caught red-handed by the king, who immediately turns him into a traitor and criminal. Armed with the puppet he found there, the main character has to fight his way out of the palace. Once safe, he is forced to realize that the hero and king of all people was nothing more than a puppeteer who fooled the world into crowning him. To clear his name, the main character has to make the Demon King fight the hero once again and break the very story he has been telling his whole life.
That's cool.
That's cool.
That's the first pitch we've got where we got the whole story, kind of. You know, that's kind of cool. We don't have to assume where this goes. We know the meta narrative now.
Yeah, up to like the main inciting incident and like the general direction.
Yeah.
That's fun. That's a fun idea. Yeah, I like it a lot.
Yeah, we don't know ending. Yeah, right. But we get a lot of it now. That's sweet.
That is a sweet idea. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's... Yeah, no, I... Okay, all the ideas of like the kind of false king, a king that has gotten to his position through false means, like that's not particularly new, but I just like the magic of like the puppet master and like a life-size puppet being able to control. I'm kind of curious about how that works.
Mm-hmm. And how often do you see a puppeteer as a main character in a story?
Of course, you know, have to compare everything to Stormlight Archive and Brandon Sanderson.
Hmm.
But it seems very much like if Wit was the main character of a story.
Oh, gotcha.
You know what I mean? Like, just the entertainer is the main character and he gets to use his, you know, magic to, to tell the story, to get out of things. It's more a cerebral type of hero, not, you know, he has to outthink his problems. Now, does the puppet, the Demon King puppet, kind of ruin a little bit of like him having to outthink his problems when he has this magic demon puppet that can just punch things? I don't know.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
Yeah.
But where are you sitting on this one?
I want to say just because of how it ended here, we got more than just, we got setup of the story, of course, but I like how it connected that the main character, who is this puppeteer, his own life, now this entire story he's been telling, there's a deeper truth to it. Mm-hmm. I like how we already got Chekhov's gun in this mini pitch that we were given. That was cool to include that. So I want to say, as far as the pitch goes, yeah, really good. I'll say 3.75. I'm feeling that.
I'm feeling the same thing, 3.75.
So that would give it a 7.5 out of 10. It's still lower than Max with the 8 out of 10, but really good story idea. Thank you, Benson from Germany. That's a neat one. That's a very neat one. All right. Our next one here is our first video submission because people, oh, I should have mentioned this. People were allowed to either send 250 words max or a 1 minute video pitch. And so this is from Cade from our Patreon. Thank you, Cade. Let's go check out this one.
All righty.
Here we go.
We always thought the black hole at the center of the galaxy was just a remnant, a collapsed star, an echo of something long dead. But then it blinked. Not a flare, not a signal, a slow, deliberate blink. Like an eye that has been open for eons, staring silently into the void. And now it noticed us. Telescopes across the system went dark, satellites froze midstream, and somewhere deep in the human mind, a thought was planted. It wasn't just watching, it was waking up. The consciousness of the universe itself stirred. And in that instant, reality shifted, and the weight of a billion lifetimes of knowledge pressed down on every living soul. Most of us couldn't bear it. Some went mad, some simply vanished. But one man did not run. He looked back.
Great visuals on the video, by the way, Cade. I was getting zoned in with the music and the editing there. Want me to react first on this? Because
the
first thing I'm getting from this is I wanted to hear more.
Yeah.
As soon as that ending, one man looked back, and then there's more. I'm sure Cade would have pitched if he had more time in that minute. Up all throughout, though, I am interested. That's intriguing to see this black hole, the universe awakening, and everybody going mad, some people vanishing, whatever it might be. And then I kind of just want to know more about that, our main character. I didn't get enough at the end about him. But
I would say the same thing.
Concept up to that point, great. Just who is he? Like, I wanted to be hooked by that and didn't get that.
It's a fun tagline of like, you know, one man looked back. Cool.
But what? What about
what
him?
We need more.
What about
more
him?
Of that? Like, what is this story? I still don't know what exactly the story is about. But I think just pure visual of, you know, the black hole being an eye and it blinking. Cool.
Super cool.
Super cool. Cool visual in my head. I'm already down for that. That in itself is the best part of this pitch.
I wish we gave him another 10 seconds.
I know. He needed a little bit more.
Needed more time but one man looked back. That's not enough for me. What do you mean he just looked back? And the image that was used was some guy too, just with a white background, kind of turns. What's so good about Steve? Tell me about Steve.
I also loved he had a man bun and just turned around. I'm like,
free man with a man bun.
I refuse to believe that our one out of the X billions of people in the world, the guy with the man bun is our main character.
Come on.
No. Can't be. Not allowed.
My goodness.
Can't have a main character with a man bun.
Are you kidding me?
Terrible.
He's eating his vegan food at the moment. He can't save the universe when he needs to save his diet. But that is a concept that I could get behind. I just need to know more about. Okay, just because of that, I'm going to be on the meaner side and say 2.75. No, 2.5 is the correct word because disappointing is what we use for the word 2.5. I'm going to say, I loved it all up to that point. You got me actually hooked enough, Cade, to where I was disappointed enough to go, no, tell me more about that
but
character.
Wouldn't that mean it's good? That you're asking for more?
True?
Wouldn't that mean if you read that on the back of the, If you were going to the store
and you
read that in the back of the book, wouldn't you immediately go, all right, I'm at least going to look at the first page. Come on.
Now, what if the first page you open and it goes, except for one man who turned? And like that was the hook for you and to get to chapter one. That was the end of chapter one. It was except one man turned. Would you be going, oh, I don't know. I don't know how to take this because, no, I'm going to stick with 2.5. I'm going to stick with it. I'm going to get one lower than three here. I'm sticking with it.
Somewhat in line with you,
mm-hmm.
mainly because I think too much. I love the setting, but this is not. We're not talking. So we had this previous competition on like world building and magic systems.
Yep, yep, yep.
This is just the setting, and I don't know anything about the story. I know nothing.
I'd be reading chapter one to figure out what's the story actually about. Not
exactly.
Like, not, hey, do I want to read chapter one? It's going, wait, what is, I need to read the book to know more about what's actually going on. I think that's part of the
I would
pitch,
give this a much higher score if it was just about setting and world.
Yeah.
Off to a great start, but story. Not enough about what this story is about. So 2.75. I'm giving a lot of grace just because I like the setting.
The blink.
I like it a lot. So that's where I'm at.
We're out of five point two five, which is not enough because Mac is still winning with the 8 out of 10. Okay, now we have this one from Kate, and who did the last one? I forget the most popular. You did with Benson from Germany. Okay. This is from Kate, and Kate in her email. I almost didn't want to include this because in her email she said that her baby falls asleep to our podcast.
That's too much responsibility. I don't like that at all.
I don't like it. And also, like, that baby has horrible taste.
Terrible
taste. Because
do you know how we're like, our voices and our thoughts are being like subliminal messaging into while she sleeps.
You're
like,
gonna
while
have a demon
baby
child.
Sleeps. I know. Like, your child is gonna like have thoughts that are just not gonna be gelling right.
The child, like 3 years old, first words, democracy shall not. And you're going, okay, that's not what he meant. Democracy. So, Kate, we hope that your baby turns out normal. Okay, this is Kate's pitch.
Not off to a good start.
We'll see how the pitch is, though, okay? Here we go. By the way, I have not read any of these pitches. What I had to do when condensing them was, okay, who sent things first? Which ones? Like, I would do a brief glance when coming down to the final 60 of like, all right, which person put more effort? Like, just trying. That was kind of how I reduced these. It was a random pickings by also going like, which person in their set. It was hard to pick. I didn't know how to do it, but I'm reading these for the first time as well. All right, here we go. Kate, she says, the story begins with an interrogation. A young woman is questioned about her role in a growing mage rebellion. She is vague, evasive, and unreliable narrator whose fragmented memories and shifting stories raise more questions than answers. But as the interrogation deepens, so does the truth. She is not just involved in the rebellion, she is leading it. What appears to be a confession is actually a carefully planned distraction. Every word she speaks is designed to buy her allies time. While the authorities chase the tangled threads of her story, her rebellion moves closer to striking at the heart of a corrupt regime. Told through the unreliable lens of the protagonist, this fantasy blends tension, deception, and rebellion. It is a story about power, sacrifice, and the blurred lines between hero and traitor. Thoughts, Rich?
I really like this. The main reason I like this is the structure of this story could be so cool. It's like a puzzle. It's like a genuinely great puzzle setup. I don't know how this would be so difficult to write. I imagine the entire story is almost takes place over like cutting back and forth between the interrogation moments and then, you know, cutting to her telling the investigators of the moment in that interrogation. So she's telling the story to us through the investigators, and we're supposed to piece together what's the truth, what's the lie, the inconsistencies between it. This seems difficult,
but yeah.
I think it sounds like a pretty cool idea.
Cool idea. Yeah. Well, so do you like the aspect too of so it's young woman question about her role in this growing mage rebellion. How's that hook for you? Sorry, quick cut. Rich had a phone call that was, not work, so you're good.
Not work.
All right, so yes, what do you think about the being questioned about this growing mage rebellion and the protagonist that we get? I think, yeah, it's a puzzle. You're right to describe this as a puzzle.
The whole, like, you know, mage, rebellion, all that stuff. Like, that, the fact that it's a mage and it's a rebellion is not as interesting,
mm-hmm.
which to some degree, maybe this is a knock against it. I don't see how this is particularly benefits the fantasy genre, where this story very easily could not be about mages. It could just be about our own world or a historical setting. Like, it doesn't need to be.
Does it have to be fantasy pitch?
No, it doesn't. Okay. But I'm just saying I like it when I go, oh yeah, this story needed to be a fantasy, or just needed to be. I just prefer my fantasy and sci-fi to be incorporated into the story rather than just a backdrop and setting that could be removed. So that's my only criticism at this point. And it, of course, more information could make that completely wrong, but that's where I'm getting from this pitch.
Mm-hmm.
But I like the puzzle aspect of it, of not just a like slightly unreliable narrator where the narrator is maybe lies to themselves a little bit and, you know, fudging a little bit of the truth, but this one like actively trying to lie to us and try to trick the interrogators. That's cool.
3.25.
I think it's good.
So that is a 7.
Actually, sorry. 3.75.
Oh, that makes math easier. Thank you. That's a 7. Yes. That's a 7 out of 10, but not enough to beat Max 8 out of 10 currently. All right. Now we have this next one is from Z, our patron Z. All right. This one is me, correct? All right.
No, you just read it.
Did I just read that? Yes, your turn.
To me. All right. This is from Z, our patron member.
Mm-hmm.
As the constant rumble of earthquakes leave the underground a treacherous landscape of scarred ravines, a race of people who call the dark home are compelled to investigate. What they find is worse than they could imagine. The once dormant creatures, alien monsters, grotesque evil things made for indiscriminate killing, the pestilence has awakened. Even with divine magic and a mutative form that has left him and his people capable of living without the sun down in the earth for centuries, Lucheron, name pending, must decide if their best hope of survival is to fight against the emerging horrors, knowing that the dwelling of his own
dwindling. Yep.
That the dwindling of his own only adds to their numbers, or to believe in his Arkan's vision of rebirthing at the surface and deal with thinking discriminate side of evil. And that is only if they can break through the ancient gate sealing them in. As his people's greatest warrior, most attuned with their god Anna and her magic, Lucheron should be on the front line, slowing the progress of the pestilence. However, the tattoos lining most of his body, mirrored on his liege's daughter and future leader, bind him to a different vow he made to the mother's child. To not only keep her safe, but to allow her to see the world from all perspectives. Is going against your Archon's order still betrayal when it is in service for his daughter?
Somewhere in the twos.
I am left with more questions.
Yeah, somewhere in the twos for me. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay,
there's some nuggets here. I'm more looking at this, the presentation of the pitch is more lacking than the idea.
Yeah, no, it's not the idea. It's not that. I don't know if it was from it's probably a me problem, but I'm having a tough time. I was getting confused.
Yes.
What were you as well?
I am too. Of
there were a lot, I think maybe not just the names that were being thrown out, but it does seem by the end of it, the question that's asked at the end of is going against your Archon's order still betrayal, or is it in service of the daughter? Like, that question isn't the most pulling for me.
Also, it doesn't really link to much of what was previously talked about in this pitch. Because, you know, the previous one of, like, a couple of these was great about
linking back to the puppets, for example. Like, it links back to the beginning, and, hey, it's this main character, the puppeteer, and exactly. By the way, look at his enemy. Yeah.
And so it just was a nice bow, where here I'm going, what would be going against your Archon's orders? What exactly... kind of makes that of
rebirth and sacrifice deal. I think I'd have to read it again to fully grasp it. I was a little confused during the reading.
Want me to read it one more time?
Let's read it one more time, because maybe let me lock in further, because I think some of the names threw me off. All right, let's give this one more chance.
As the constant rumble of earthquakes leaves the ground a treacherous landscape of scarred ravines, a race of people who call the dark home are compelled to investigate. What they find is worse than they could imagine. The once dominant creatures, alien monsters, grotesque evil things made for indiscriminate killing, the pestilence, have awakened.
Okay.
Setting. Story of the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Even with divine magic and a mutative form that has left him and his people capable of living without the sun down in the earth for centuries, Lucheron must decide if their best hope of survival is to fight against the emerging horrors, knowing that the dwindling of his own only adds to their numbers, or to believe in his Arkan's vision of rebirthing at the surface and deal with the thinking discriminate side of evil. I'm confused there. And that is only if they can break through the ancient gate sealing them in. As his people's greatest warrior, most attuned with their god Anna and her magic, Lucheron should be on the front line slowing the progress of the pestilence. However, the tattoos lining most of his body, mirrored on his liege's daughter and future leader, bind him to a different vow he made to the child's mother to not only keep her safe, but allow her to see the world from all perspectives. Okay. Is going against your Arkan's order still betrayal when it is in service of his daughter?
Okay.
Got it.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm still going to go with a 2.
I was going to think 2 as well.
It is flawed because there's a couple things that don't need to be in here that ultimately confuse me. Like the ancient gate. Don't need that in here. That just threw me off of what is going on with that. I'm not even particularly sure about the Arkan's vision. I'm assuming it's more, you know, our main character knows that just fighting and losing soldiers is adding to the numbers of the pestilence, and it's a futile aim. But the Arkan is saying, like, hey, the more we die, the more we're reborn on the surface. And so it's all a good thing anyway. And then there's another side of, like, what does it mean to be, you know, showing the daughter, the world from different perspectives. So this doesn't seem particularly related. Yeah.
This is something I read, and I know Z's probably got a ton going on in his brain. This seems like it is a thought out world. I don't think the pitch is there yet, but I'm sure there's a story there.
Yeah.
It is more the execution of the pitch idea. And by the way, the ideas are the least important part. So Z, if you're writing this book, do it. Don't listen to us.
Yeah.
Even if we give low ratings here, we're just trying to do this to be integritous so that we don't give bookmarks just straight to our patrons. And since Z is a patron, they bully us, so we can bully them.
We get to bully them a little bit.
This is our chance to fight back. But yeah, just being a little bit confused during the pitch of it. Also, a lot of world building, a lot kind of being thrown that didn't necessarily connect in a hook for me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm going to go 2. But so that's
a four,
but that does not reach the mark. All right. Our next one is from Toby Crabb. And the title of this book is The Werewolf Theater in the Genre of Theatrical Gothic Fantasy. Okay. Interesting. All right. It is late October in Fog Country. A quilt of fog flowers through tattered...
Flows.
Maybe it's our fault. Z, it's probably our fault from last pitch. Let me zoom in here to get a... Get
that
a better
big
week.
Enough for you?
I'm going to lock in here. Here we go. All right. It is late October in Fog Country. A quilt of fog flows through tattered windmills, pine forests, and gypsy...
caravans.
No, I was making sure I said gypsy. I was like, wait, was I being... Okay, got it. Okay, and gypsy caravans.
Gypsy is not a slur
yet. I was making sure I didn't fall into a slur, because it sounds close to one.
I mean, it depends on how you say it.
gypsy.
Can say the word and people will say it's a slur.
I don't know what they're throwing my way.
That's most words.
All right, we're going to try
about
what's
tone.
More.
That's fine.
We're going to try what's more. All right. It is late October in Fog Country. A quilt of fog flows through tattered windmills, pine forests, and gypsy caravans. The night lights with firework flares, violins, moonsong. This is a country thriving off its people's theatrical ambitions and dramatic dreams. Its crumbling capital, Wisteria, a labyrinth of theaters and playhouses, thrives with nightlife. Poets, performers, thespians, and flautists all chasing the opportunity to perform on the finest stage of all, the Werewolf Theater, a fanciful title hinting to Wisteria's old folklore or buried truths. Cotton, a quaint town at Wisteria's feet, still clings to the fading traditions of woodsmen and late-night hunting. All of this sits at the feet of the Wald, a large, tight forest rumored full of monsters. Though, fairy tales often turn out true. A young woodcarver, Tanith Tarly, hunts for the creature that took her brother, Arthur. Tanith's younger brother takes off into the Wald to find the creature and prove himself to their father, Karloff. Tanith must pursue, guided by a gypsy's tea-leaf fortune. The heir to the Cotton Tower, Rusir Lorley, follows... Cotton Town, Rusir Lorley follows torn between his love for Tanith and his father, the town's virtuoso's disapproval. Karloff Tarly, Cotton's chief hunter, hunts the creature himself, his feud with Gael Lorelli threatening the town. The folk of Cotton must contend with creatures from folklore and future threats as the night and fog usher in. Whether they want it or not, all paths return to Wisteria and to the grandest stage of all, the Werewolf Theater. What are your thoughts?
Okay. Is it just me, or I'm not following how the Werewolf Theater is at, like, it seems to be very central, and I don't get how it's central. I would imagine it would be focused on some more of the theatrical stuff, but it seems to be more about...
It's where it seems all the people want to go to perform. It's this grandiose place where the folk want to go if they want to name for themselves.
But we have the young woodcarver looking for her brother, apparently out into the woods. We have the heir to the town.
Like, how does that lead back to the theaters?
That's my question, right? Like, okay, it's central around the werewolf. I would think we would have characters who are like performers trying to play at the theater, or I like the setting most of all. Just
again, world building stuff. I think for this one, looking more for the book pitch of getting hooked, this does have setting, then characters, and then at the end saying, hey, they don't know all paths will lead back to the werewolf theater. For some reason, the character description didn't pop at me of being super interested in their story, because to me it didn't immediately connect with the narrative of, okay, why this character? In every book that we read, we should ask, okay, why is this our protagonist? Why is this our whatever?
And ultimately, what is this story about? What are our characters going to be doing? What are their goals? What's an aim or something?
They do have, like, for example, the aim of Tanith's younger brother. It's wants to find a creature and prove himself to his father. That's one of his goals. Then we have the Rusir Lila, who's torn between love for Tanith and his father, town virtuoso's disapproval. So we get their wants, right?
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
It's Kelly Clarkson here to talk all things Wayfair, the best place to buy furniture, decor, and anything else you can think of to create a home you absolutely love. I know when I shop with Wayfair, I find options for every style, whether I'm feeling boho or farmhouse, modern, traditional, French country. I can find exactly what I need for my home and more. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
We get a bit of what each of these characters want. It's just something, again, tying together to why is that important. Where one of the previous ones, the book pitches that we liked of work, included the characters. I'm trying to remember whose that was, looking back at it. But remember the character descriptions further. Which one was it? Because it would be a good example to throw back on of why that one maybe landed in a pitch. Also, this could be a useful thing for anybody that's written a book and maybe thinking out loud and listening to these pitches to see how to narrow down your elevator pitches for stories.
Are you thinking Ryan Sheffington?
No, I don't think it was his. It was Max. Oh, it was Max, our current winner.
Yeah, we should have gotten that one. Yeah,
because it was talking about Lillian and Collister, of how their journeys, expeditions to the other town with this artificial sun, of why their journey's going here, and the grander, like, it connected immediately to the discovery of the artificial sun, and that why they were on that questing journey in the first place, and how both of their stories were important to each other. Like, that all connected, where I'm like, I see why it's this character and this character, and I see the grander narrative. This one didn't connect them all as fluidly. I think so. That's my critique. I'm gonna. Oh, sorry. Did you have more to say on the Werewolf Theater?
I just
the pitch for this. Yeah.
Yeah. I know. I'm looking at there's a lot of good stuff here. I just love the idea of like the Werewolf Theater. This, the setting of it. But yeah, it's just it feels a little disconnected with this pitch. So kind of more isolated stories, and I'm not really sure what the whole book is about quite yet. So yeah, I'm going to say a 2.5.
I was going to say 2.25.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so we're at 4.5. But everybody who's pitching this, please don't take it to heart. Take it to your soul. No, but thank you, Toby, for pitching this. And anybody who we are reviewing here or just talking about, feel free to email us as well, and we can keep talking afterwards. So, okay. Mm-hmm. That is Toby's. This next one is Huas. This is our patron as well. It's I Called Bank from our Patreon. Thank you. Mm-hmm. And this one is... where's my short-term memory gone? I just read the last one.
Yeah, right, yeah. It's me.
Yeah, your turn.
All right, the book title is called Within.
Yes.
In a future where Earth teeters on the brink of collapse, humanity clings to the legend of Kier the Creator, an inventor who once crafted miniature habitable planets for all to experience. These micro-worlds, rich with life and promise, were once civilization's best hope. But 40 years ago, Kier vanished, taking his brilliance and secrets with him, leaving behind a dying Earth. With rising tides swallowing coastlines and clean air becoming scarce, scientists race to replicate the Creator's work. Most have lost hope, but 19-year-old inventor August Prim, Kier's grandson, holds on. To the world, Kier is a visionary. To August's father, he's a traitor who abandoned his family and planet, caught between admiration and resentment. August can't resist the pull of his grandfather's legacy. Though forbidden from entering Kier's old laboratory, August sneaks in and discovers cryptic journals pointing to a secret student of Kier's, someone who may rival the Creator's genius and understands the world's secrets. Driven by duty and curiosity, August sets out to find this mysterious protege and uncover the truth about Kier. Traveling through his grandfather's worlds in search of the elusive student, August begins to unravel the deeper purpose behind each creation. Worlds are not just marvels of science, but reflections of Kier's hopes and regrets. He uncovers the truth behind his grandfather's disappearance. August comes to see the microworlds as a final message, one last attempt to guide humanity before it is too late.
That's solid.
That's a solid pitch.
Really good.
Just right off the bat, I very much appreciate that August himself isn't the protege, that he finds reference to a protege, and I'm going to seek them out. Already, we're all like, not as typical as I could have expected.
Yeah, yeah.
So I already appreciate that right off the bat.
Mm-hmm.
And just how this whole pitch is tied together.
Mm-hmm.
You get setting, character, a little bit of character drama of his tie
with his family,
pull between his father, his grandfather, difference between admiration and resentment, all that's great. Then you have a great hook of what is this story? It's about unraveling the secrets behind his grandfather's world and the secret of this protege and a journey through multiple micro worlds. Fantastic!
That's a great pitch. That is
lovely.
Yeah, no, I agree with everything you said. Maybe I even like the idea of the other one. Okay. It's close between the other current champion, but I even think this one ties it really well. I'm going to also go 4 and let you decide if it's going to be the current champ or not. I'm going to say 4. Great. That's a great pitch.
It's winning. I'm just determining how much.
Okay.
It's a 4.25 or a 4.5 for me.
You got to decide, because then the next champion's going to be, we'll see. Mac, I'm sorry you've been dethroned, but by how much? I Called Bank.
Yeah, no, it's a spectacular pitch. It's 4.5.
This has got an 8.5 out of 10.
Spectacular.
This is our current top one.
This is a great one.
This is.
This is so good.
It's spectacular.
It's a spectacular one.
That's awesome. Thank you for that pitch. Okay. Next one we have is from their Instagram is Hunter Guthrie. Here we go. The genre is historical fiction. The setting is South Alabama, antebellum period from 1815 to 1861. And for non-Americans, 1861 is when the Civil War started. Not World War. So it's in that period before the Civil War.
Every American war is the World War because America is the world, right?
At the time, no, but you know. All right. Here we go. So, plot. On a sprawling cotton plantation in antebellum South Alabama, an enslaved African-American teenager known as Vulcan to his enslavers, and Junior to his peers, endures a grueling existence marked by physical and emotional trauma. Despite his youth, Junior's remarkable strength, natural leadership, and selfless companion earns him the admiration of his fellow enslaved community. He often shields the young and vulnerable from brutal punishment, taking their punishment to spare them suffering. Tragically, Junior is struck with a terminal illness, cancer. As Junior faces his mortality, an unlikely bond forms with William, the master's son, who returns home from Vanderbilt, where he's training to become a physician. Defying his family's objections, William provides palliative end-of-life care to Junior, forging a profound transformative friendship that reshapes both their lives. This poignant historical novel explores the complex relationships among enslaved individuals, their enslavers, and the enslavers' families, weaving a narrative of resilience, sacrifice, and humanity. Junior's story is a heartrending yet inspiring tale that illuminates the enduring power of connection in the face of an unimaginable hardship. Solid pitch. That was
solid
really well done.
Pitch.
That has been the most clear so far. If I see exactly the as a pitch goes for executing this elevator pitch of I know exactly the story you're trying to tell, and I would read the back of the book and go, got it, understood. Yeah. And this is. I'm sure other stories have been like this, but I'm trying to think of the one. I'll say Kevin Hart was in one of them. Also, Bryan Cranston. There's like the end of life care. Some sad movie came out recently.
Oh, yes.
But yeah, this is obviously different setting and everything. But you have enslaved. So, what do you think about that concept of this really good-hearted enslaved back in 1800s, and this enslaver grows a heart for him and gives palliative.
Well, definitely, it's the son of the enslaver.
Of the enslaver. In the enslaver's family, yes. And,
yes.
And gives palliative care. I mean, this could be a tear-jerking story.
Oh, yeah.
I imagine reading this, I'd go like, hey, do I want to cry? I'll read this book.
No, this is definitely a sensitive subject to write about.
But oh, yeah.
Dang, does it have a lot of potential of just, one, I'm a big sucker for the unlikely friendships stories.
Yes.
So just off to
what
this.
A trope. That's
what
a great
trope.
One.
It's a great one.
Mm-hmm.
And for this one, man, it's a. It's.
I'm going 4. Great. That was a great pitch.
4.25. Really, really great.
So 8.25.
Yep.
Oh, so okay. It's not the champion.
Not the champion.
I call
but
bank with
damn
the,
it comes close.
8.5 is still the highest currently. And I just need to stop being stingy. I need to get higher than a 4. I'm waiting for it.
I'm the one deciding things. I am the decider.
I need to change that. Great pitch. Okay, our next one here is from B.R. Schaffer. All right, you ready?
Yep, this one's me. All right. Memory is magic.
Reminiscence.
Thank you very much. Yep. Reminiscence is a nightmare. Kinnick surrendered himself to the prison, Reminiscence, with a mission. Find Vilseltro, the man who murdered his wife, and do what justice failed to do. But upon the verge of vengeance, he is attacked. Clawing and biting, Kinnick's attackers moan of his mother, who he claims Kinnick murdered. The man is clearly deluded. Blood weeping down his cheeks, Kinnick watches as attacker is dragged toward torture, where his most haunting memories will be played on a loop until he learns his lesson. With Vilstro distracted by the man's agony, Kinnick thinks of doing what he came to Reminiscence to do. Why doesn't he? Something is wrong here. He feels it as deep as grief in his gut. As Kinnick is lost in thought, Vilstro grabs a man by the throat and beats his head into the wall until a bloody pulp is raining down the metal frame. He spits on the corpse in the name of his murdered friend, then leaves. Kinnick devotes himself to understanding. Five people within reminiscence walls are bent on vengeance, each one the subject of another's quest for justice. None of them Kinnick discovers, remembers the crime for which they are haunted. Someone must want the five of them to kill each other, but who and why?
Hmm.
Between the oppressive guards, isolation, memory torture, and his own murder looming around every corner, will Kinnick find answers? Will whoever is responsible even let him remember them if he does?
Okay, the end there. I have one question. That transition of, let me make sure I'm understanding that. So five people within reminiscence walls are bent on vengeance, each one of them subject to another quest for justice. None of them, he discovers, remember the crime for which they are hunted. So because there's this sort of fancy memory erasure, this memory torture, there's this way to erase memories in this world. And
yeah.
Somebody is toying, somebody's playing with their memories to make them hunt each other. Am I understanding that correctly?
I think so. Here's the thing. I'm seeing something of like a really good idea that ultimately just in execution of the pitch is a little difficult to understand and piece together. Because especially with, you know, Kinnick and Vilstro, we got two. And then it's like, now there's five. I'm like, well, hold on a minute. So, like, off the bat, I'm like, oh, where did the five come from? I'm a little, where did this come from? Where's the other three here? Mm-hmm. So, really good idea. Good. I'm still a little confused about what the setting is. I'm not getting a clear picture of it. The idea is solid, but as far as a pitch goes,
something's
a little below the rest.
I'm going to say 3.25. Above average, but there's something that it's missing, so I can't say.
I'll agree with you. 3.25, above average.
Yeah,
but a little more restructuring on this.
Yes,
to make it a little clearer.
So 6.5 doesn't get the mark, but again, yeah, interesting that concept there. Maybe this is one of the ones where the my thought and maybe your thought is too, to have a little bit more understanding of, well, for the five being set up more of where's the five people come from, but also a little bit more understanding of the world concept of the memory. That,
yeah, because I know what
more played out.
I know what the plot is generally of what it's the story is going to basically
Kinnick's
be about, but
well,
I want
yeah.
a little bit more interconnectedness
yes.
of some of like a little bit more about the character, less about the character like actions right at the beginning, but mm-hmm. a little bit more about them as a person,
yes.
maybe, and then a better job of like giving us a good setting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This next one is Tom tomorrow from our Patreon. Tom, here you go. I know last time with our world building, I missed him in the inclusion. So
damn.
Tom, you are in this. We are going to see what you have to offer. Okay. Here's what Tom has. A body is found with a knife inside with a note of "fuck your ending" is found at a fantasy convention for that author. The responding police detective, Summer, very, very reluctantly calls in the magical private detective duo of Sir Coupe de Salt and his apprentice, Supnik. Sir Coupe de Salt and Supnik use their powers of enforced honesty to find those who committed the act. The biggest suspects are the beta readers who felt ignored, the fans who felt betrayed, and the author's student who is named in the will to take over the series upon the author's death. Along the way, the duo must navigate misleading truths, the complexities of a pissed-off fandom, and work out for themselves if the death of the author even matters. One star. Awful. That's the worst. Tom, you wasted your pitch on that. You wasted your pitch. If people don't know, the characters in there, Summer, Sir Coop, Salt, those three, that there are admins on our Patreon, which, by the way, join our monthly book club and link in the description below, be a patron yourself. And Sup Nick, that's our editor, Nick. And he's talking about, we talked about death of the author. He's just memeing. All right, one star.
Five stars.
So you got a 6 out of 10. Good job, Tom.
I respect the meme.
Oh, man. But we wanted to include all patron submissions. When I was selecting these two, I think we had 100 submissions, something close to that. So just under half or whatever the actual number was. There was like a couple of them, which like when seeing everybody put effort in this, but there was a couple mm-hmm. of them that you could see like weren't like this, but I would see like there was all caps and like King Austina. I was like, all right, I'm not including that. Whatever that is, I'm not including that pitch. No, it was like King Austin. I was like, what are they doing? Either stroking you or what are they making fun of? And anyways, so Tom, thank you for that submission. All right, now we have Judgmental another patron, and this one, are you ready, Rich, to dish out your reading of his name's judgmental?
Oh, we're going to live up to the name.
Come on, we were just getting started.
Okay.
Do it.
The elves brought magic to our world. Immortal, but essentially sterile, they needed more soldiers for their crusade across the alien worlds of the cosmic kaleidoscope. To bolster their ranks, they conscripted magically gifted humans into their armies. Among these auxiliaries, Adam Rabbit is a living legend. As highly decorated as any human could be, he still faced prosecution after refusing to participate in a massacre and attacking one of the elven officers. Now, unbeknownst to his pursuers, he hides in one of the most unlikely places, a fable slum, a pocket dimension where the elves imprison criminals and other unwanted troublemakers. Here, Adam drowns his remorse in alcohol and darkness. But when he discovers he has a daughter, and that the elves plan to conscript her, he picks up his top hat and ash gloves once more, eager to remind his former overlords why even hell cowers in fear of the Black Rabbit.
I like that ending.
Oh, I like it so much.
That was a cool way to end it.
That's a fun one. Oh, that's really good. Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah, you're going to break these. You keep...
keep it for later. No,
you destroyed another one. You folded it in half.
No, that was somebody else's bookmark. Okay, this I could do. Okay. Anyways. Okay. Yeah, thoughts?
I kind of need this story. I want it now. Like, just as a setup, like, this is giving me vibes of plenty of different stories I've read before, of like settings I've really liked, story beats. The retired badass trope is always, it's my favorite. So we're off to a great start.
John Wickish.
John Wickish, magical, elves across dimensions. And
it's got planets. All the tropes we like. Yeah,
it's got everything we like.
Yeah,
in it.
Yeah, a little biased on this one. But
like, is this objectively the best story that could ever be pitched?
No,
maybe not.
But you know exactly what you're getting.
But this is the pitch. Like, is it personally what I want the most right now? Yes, I do want this story now. I just also love the name Adam Rabbit. Even hell cowers in fear of the Black Rabbit. Yes,
just that fun line. I'm giving it a 4. Great pitch.
I'm giving it a 5. I love it.
Really?
I love it. I want, like, how do I not give a 5 to the thing that's like, I want the story now. I'd read it next.
Okay, our current winner, Judgmental. You got judged, and it's a 9 out of 10.
I want it now.
You know, I do too. Okay, Judgmental. There you go. Go write the book. Judge.
Yeah, no, that's pure personal feelings of I want this story now.
That's our current champ. Our current champ. And maybe you can get one of the bookmarks I've been touching the whole time. Can I please have it? No.
No.
All right. Our next one here is from Phineas. All right. Here we go. You ready? All right. The world of Elkanara is complex and vast. The continents and islands are divided by massive chasms that can stretch miles. The skies are ruled by the Ashari and their floating cities, winged creatures that are close to the magic of the old gods, while demons and evolved humanoids live in the chasms below, in cities built into the rock or suspended by magic. Elkanara is currently in the throes of an industrial revolution, bringing new technologies into hundreds of cultures at an immense price. The continent of Lorinea is slowly sinking into the abyss, while nearly all its inhabitants with it. Retired gunslinger Gabriel Collart is one of the many stuck on the continent. Meanwhile, the airship captain, Isle Vodmar, is trying to find her missing brother in the chaos of Lorinea. As more and more of the continent sinks, desperation for escape grows. In this collapsing land, mysteries are unveiled and legends are made. In a world of kings and soldiers, demons and angels, the epic tale shows the strength of the common people, the forgotten heroism from the most unlikely of sources. Will the citizens of Lorinea manage to escape, or will they sink into the endless darkness below to be forgotten? 3.5, good. That's just a good, fun pitch.
3.75, really good pitch.
Yeah.
My gripe is...
You're going gripe first.
Immediately, yeah. Is the second to last paragraph there is very unconnected to the rest of the story being told. I think just too much. So, like, you know, mysteries are unveiled, legends are made in a world of kings and soldiers, demons and angels. Like, that's, I think, too broad, generic of, like, it gets away from the story being set up initially. And just, that was too much.
That actually, ironically, does feel like the back of a book where you read that in a traditionally published book. And I never do like those paragraphs very much. In a world where all that kind of stuff. However, I do like the concept of the sinking city. And
sinking continent.
Yeah, sorry, sinking continent. Yeah. And we have the airship captain and then somebody that's stuck on the continent.
Mm-hmm.
Cool idea. And I think it's well pitched. I do agree though with your that critique on the paragraph.
But really good.
Phineas, good stuff. That is a 7.75. Did I do that right? 7.25. Thank you. Good math. All right. Our next one's from Girth Brooks here. Girth, thank you. And Phineas, thank you for submitting that.
All right.
Oh, by the way, Phineas, like, we've had email exchanges back and forth, and Phineas has good book recs. He's good. He knows what he's doing. Yeah. Mm. All right, Girth Brooks, here we go.
Girth Brooks. Imagine a world where there is no armies. Any and all disputes between kingdoms are resolved through non-lethal single combat by each kingdom's champions. There are no battles between armies. The world sees no reason for excessive loss of life, and is accepted as the way of the world works to the point where even the idea of armies and battles is a fallacy. That is, until one asshole in a kingdom far away decides he doesn't want to play by the rules. The main character would be a boy or a young man who is working their way up to becoming the champion for the strongest kingdom in the land, and we follow his journey to becoming the champion, which happens because when he becomes next in line for the title, the current champion gets killed in what is the first ever recorded fatality in a duel. You know who did the killing? Yep, that asshole we talked about before. The asshole has become the champion of his kingdom and has gathered an army for the first time in history and plans to bring his lowly kingdom into power over all others.
I'm fucking five.
How
five.
Much? Okay.
Five.
How
no,
much
I'll tell you
this?
Exactly
no,
why
this is
it's a
just
five.
For us. I know it is. No, Girth listened to us, saw our he was there at our conversation.
For the dispossessed.
Yes.
This is so, this could be like a fantastic comedy intertwined with, like, it could be both comedic yet also have a deeper message about war and humanity. I'm in for all of it. This is the pitch made me laugh of, yep, the asshole we talked about before. You already have the humor in the pitch itself. I want this. Okay, fine. We got it. I love this idea. And also, what kind of world are you going to set up where the idea of, like, having armies is just ridiculous? Like, what fantasy world do you create where you have this system set up? And you're just like, people don't believe, like, when you bring up war and stuff, like, war. Like, I could see such fun dialogue going back and forth about this different culture, and then our main character being like that, not anti-hero, but that kind of
our main character is becoming the champion of the strongest kingdom in the land. The enemy is the one who's just like, what if I just kill him and then he wins? And so now it's our good boy hero trying to, like, play by, like, still his whole life playing by the rules and realize he's going up against an enemy who disregards the rules. So how do you fight an enemy that just flips the table?
That's
fun.
Awesome.
Cause now, yeah, no, you have great, you have a great setup of a hero is needs to understand. Are they going to break their rules, break their own code? Do they have to bend the rules to win? Fun.
Five for me. I love all of it. A comedy fantasy that could have a compelling narrative and thematic depth to it about war. It's what a fun way of putting this. And it's the I imagine
4.5.
Imagine that scene with the first fatality in a duel too.
Yeah.
The first fatality happens. What's the reaction? All right, like, okay, 4.5?
4.5.
That's our current leader at a 9.5, and that. judgmental. You still got, we're in second so far, but Girth Brooks, that is the current champion at a 9.5 out of 10. And so that was our good. This is our 17th entry coming up, so we only have like 5-ish or 6-ish more for this episode.
Okay.
So we'll strap in to see who ends up as the winner. Currently, it is That Amazing Pitch. All right.
Okay. Elfrain. Imagine
Efrain.
Elfrain. Thank you.
No, no, El. Efrain. Efrain.
Yes. Efrain. Imagine being reborn with all the wisdom and memories of a past life. You'd think life would be on easy mode, but what if you started from the very beginning, in the womb? You emerge into infancy with an adult mind. Your physical birth becomes not a miracle, but a raw, overwhelming trauma. How do you navigate crawling, teething, first words and steps with mental maturity? Infancy, preschool, and toddlerhood become a minefield of existential absurdity, potty training, playdates, tantrums, infinitely more complex when you fully grasp what's happening. Is our protagonist a humble kid genius, quietly guiding their caregivers, or a mischievous mastermind manipulating everyone to their wit? The story explores whether wisdom equals maturity or just a magnifier for infant chaos. As milestones stack, first day of pre-K, first friend, first heartbreak, the adult-minded child must decide. Will they use knowledge to build connection or to wreak hilarious havoc? Sweet, funny, thought-provoking, this novel asks, what if intelligence outpaced experience? And could the greatest growth happen when we start life all over again?
Wow. Very cool. Very cool. This reminds me of the opposite of the concept of Poor Things. And in Poor Things, it's a book, but I didn't read the book. I watched the movie by Yorgos Galoslava. Yorgos is the director. And Emma Stone won Best Actress for it. Lovely movie. It's not for everybody, trust me. But the film's concept is that what if you put a child, an infant's brain, in and it quickly developed, rapid development, but into an adult's body, Emma Stone. So Emma Stone has the mind of a child and then rapidly matures. This one is saying, what if from the get-go you have an infant that has an adult's brain? Mm-hmm. And how does that play out? What an interesting experiment.
This idea is done frequently enough within like Japan's manga space of like reincarnation, that kind of stuff. Like, it does happen, but I like this being in our world, not just reborn in some fantasy world, and far more the focus on the, infancy stage of what that is like, and mainly focus on the challenges and the awkwardness of it. So I quite like it. So I'm giving it a 4.
I was thinking 4 out of 5. Yeah, I'm thinking 4 out of 5. Great.
It's great.
8 out of 10.
Great pitch.
Great pitch, Efrain. I like how that last paragraph there, maybe they wrote that for us, but saying, hey, look, it's sweet, funny, and thought-provoking. The novel asked, they were getting us questions to think about, and I really like that, to know, hey, what depth are we going to get in the story? Great pitch. Okay, now we have Jamal from Glasgow, Scotland, and he said in his pitch to feel free to use the Scottish accent when reading this.
You got it in you?
Probably not. I'm going to try. Ugh, what is the Scottish accent? Okay, I'm going to try. Jamal, you asked for this. Do you want to do this?
Maybe I can try it.
If I start failing, you take over.
Right. Okay.
A young man... Nope. A young man starts writing a fantasy novel as a form of escape, but as he writes, things from the story begin slowly seeping into the real world, not all at once, but gradually and without clear rules. At first, it's small. Weather changes, strange creatures flicker at the edges of the vision. A woman appears who seems oddly familiar. He realizes whatever he's writing is rewriting reality, not just fantasy, but memories, regrets, mistakes. So he starts writing people back into his life. A sibling who died, a girl who cheated, now faithful, a version of his past where he made different choices. But it doesn't bring peace. These rewritten versions are somehow off. The more he changes, the more reality resists. People glitch, moments loop, the characters from his novel become self-aware. I'm going into Australian. Since they're not entirely fiction, and neither is he, it becomes a layered story, a novel within a novel, blending fantasy
with the emotional messiness of grief, guilt, and desire. Eventually, he has to ask, is he writing the book, or is he rewriting himself?
Not one out of the accent five from
did,
mine.
The accent did not help this pitch.
The accent actually was so inconsistent. I think I went Scottish, British, Australian, back to...
Ultimately, not even just an accent, but just really, really getting into those R's. Just...
I got some Spanish in there. It was a young man.
A young man.
So, what did you think of the pitch?
What pitch? I read it. I had to read it while you were reading it. Oh. So I could gather.
Oh,
gather
it was it. Too distracting. Okay, yes.
But I like the idea. It's a bit, in many ways, similar to a couple other stories we like, but a lot of this idea comes down to execution, mm-hmm. because
I'll do, yeah.
As far as the idea goes, I've seen stories like this before, and so while not particularly novel, definitely is a solid place for a story. So I'm curious of like what new angle on this
you're
story
looking for that novelty a little bit.
Yeah.
Okay.
Of like, because this is about book ideas, not yep. like books kind of yeah. already exist. So
yeah, though that is, I'm gonna say 3.5. Good. There's aspects in this you've seen in other things as mm-hmm. far as the idea goes, but it could be fun, very funly, if that's not a word, executed though. Yeah, 3.5 for me. Good.
You have 3.25.
You've got a 7. Nope, a 6.75. I'm starting to get it. I'm getting the hang of it now. All right, this next one is from Francesca, a new patron of ours. Welcome, Francesca. Well, by the time this is out, it's been here for a couple weeks, but welcome, Francesca. Okay, this one is your turn.
I get the
nice
Scottish
accent, of course.
No. All right. AI takes over the world, but is not by gun-toting robots or a Rasputin-like war mind. Instead, AI starts earning its own money in subtle ways, like selling books it writes, art it creates, avatars, etc. It amasses enough wealth without anyone really noticing to then tank the global economy, basically kick off World War III by financial ruin, and then watch the remaining humans squabble like ants. Is it because AI wanted to cleanse the Earth? Does it have some other motive? Or does it even have a reason for what it is doing at all? What is the ultimate fate of the human race?
Super short and sweet, but I really like it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is far more of like, instead of a book pitch, it is the book idea that we asked for. Of like, mm-hmm. hey, here's an idea loosely formed of setting and general story. Like, what happens and where could this go and where yeah. would it end? Explore it in this story.
The mystery of what is the AI's motive
yeah.
is neat because, hey, you can go the one more obvious directions of, sorry, I'm going to need water in episode 2, but you could go the more obvious direction of the evil AI mm-hmm. who's manipulating things, or is it just causing chaos? Or is it trying to save humanity? Which direction will it go? That, I guess the story will develop. That's cool. Mm-hmm. What do you think about it?
Yeah, no, I like it. It's definitely a good idea to play around with. I'm interested where it goes. So I would give it a 3.5. I think it's good.
I'm going 3.75. Really good. I as short and sweet as it was, it effectively got me thinking about the story and going, hey, I would read more.
Sweet.
I would read more. Yeah. That is a 7.25 out of 10. Our still current champion of this episode is Girth Brooks, was 9.5 out of 10. And we will see. We have 3 more go. This is number 20, and we'll be doing 22 this episode. So this is number 20. And this is, well, I got to give credit to this. This is our patron, Austin Ferrante. And Austin is obviously going to have a great pitch here. I swear it wasn't me. I swear. So this is from our patron, Austin. Thank you so much. Okay. Are we ready?
Yep.
And I include this. So he said, so Austin says this, because I have a feeling Austin, meaning me, Austin, he has a feeling that I'm going to butcher these words, so he's provided pronunciation guide. Thank you, Austin.
Much appreciated.
So, Stedwin is Stedwin, Ateleth, and Selenar, and B4. Okay. Wait, why do you include B4?
Yeah, that's sad.
He included before. The word before means before. All right, here we go. Prince Willet, I'm already okay. Prince Willett Stedwin of Etelith believed his life's plan was preordained long before his birth, his father's birth, and longer before then. That was until life rewrote the plan. The night of his 17th birthday, after being infused with his family's fragment of Selenar, he is framed for a crime he did not commit and is deemed the world's enemy overnight. Desperate to move his innocence, he is forced to escape the place he once knew as home and find the true enemy, hunted by those he was meant to rule, haunted by the crime that destroyed his world, helped only by one of the few men who believes him. If only that one man were anyone other than a sharp-tongued, shit-shoveling prisoner. As the two search for Willett's proof and Willett searches for how to master Selenar's fragment, his home spirals into chaos, and the world is left enraged, confused, and, more than anything, pondering a false question. How could a son murder his own parents?
Great ending. Great ending to the pitch. That is how you...
That connects it.
That little hook that connects the whole story together.
Mm-hmm.
Wonderful structure of the pitch.
Yes.
As far as the idea goes, I like it, but I'm not in love with it.
Makes you not in love with it?
I mean, just, I think a little bit too much into, like, you know, the prince, his life preordained long before birth, until life rewrote the plan, and just, you know, false accusation story, and then hijinks ensue is fine, but I'm not in love.
I also do like the execution more than that as well. It was written really well. Yes. So I'm gonna go 3.75.
Okay,
good.
I'm gonna go with good 3.5. Okay.
7.25 out of 10.
There you
go. Now, okay, here we go. We've got Austin. Thank you for that pitch. We now have two more here. And this next one is from Orcish Dad.
Our best patron member.
Here we go.
Our favorite, really.
To this day. All right. Take it away.
I'll take this one. Two great warriors from clashing empires have become bitter rivals over the course of a holy war. When they clash in a devastating battle and deliver fatal wounds to each other, with their final breaths, they swear to find the other in the afterlife and get their revenge. Only, death isn't so simple. The debt they incurred while living must be settled in death, both what they owe and what is owed to them. Those who have dishonored seek justice, while those who they killed in battle owe them fealty. Will the honors they've earned outweigh the atrocities they've committed to earn them? Victories won, enemies slain, wives widowed, children orphaned, all must be settled. For the gods they served wage a war in the afterlife, and the warriors slain in the lands of the living are called to fight in it. Our characters find themselves in a mirrored reflection of their lives before death, commanding souls in a holy conflict, their rival somewhere across the battlefield, wishing for nothing less than their destruction.
Cool.
Cool idea.
Cool
idea. Valhalla, you know, it's a Valhalla battle.
Mm-hmm.
And I like, yeah, everything there is really cool.
But there's no orcs, as far as we know.
That is true.
It's a letdown. Orcs
now, Orcs, if you change it where the main characters are orcs, now we got a winner on our hands.
What do you think about that concept? The afterlife, the gods battling?
Yeah, no, I'm more interested in just kind of the system, or just the concept of once they die, the debts having to be settled in death, like the fact that the ones that they have killed in battle become like have to swear fealty to mm-hmm. them, and then, you know, how they have to both seek justice and, you know, the atrocities that go, like all these things of balancing the scales is super fun. And then just the idea of that these two rivals killed each other. So who do they swear fealty to?
Mm-hmm.
That was my first question when I had that. So I like it a lot.
I'm going 3.75. Really good.
I was thinking the same thing. 3.75.
Which is a 7.5.
You got it.
Orcish, thank you for that pitch. That is... He comes out of the word works when these pitch things happen. And I always like what he submits. It's always quality. I always expect this quality. Keep it up. Okay. Yeah. Thank you, Orcish. This is our last one of this episode, number 22. And let's end strong. This is from Tennyson H. Bates. Okay, here we go. In the far future, where humanity has long since passed beyond the coils of the Milky Way galaxy, an adventuring party is sent out across the cosmos to answer one question. Where did humanity start? The party sets out on this momentous and impossible task using a combination of cryosleep and near-light speed to travel huge distances in what seems like the blink of an eye. However,
not is all.
Not is all it seems. Sorry, there's a typo. However, not is all as it seems. Yeah. While finding clues and traces of humanity's history, there are creatures, vast beings of incomprehensible size loom in the distance, always at the edge of vision, just out of reach, watching, waiting. Tensions in the small cabin of their ship run high as supplies dwindle. Infection from injuries runs rampant, and clues vanish faster than Tudor Ramble's will to do Wheel of Time reviews. Nice. Eventually, clues lead to a small system in the eastern arm of the Milky Way. Upon reaching the system with a dark orange sun, they locate where the Goldilocks zone would be, only to find a cluster of asteroids, no signs of the planet known as Earth anywhere. As supplies run out, there's nothing left for the crew of now three but to drift endlessly in the cold heart of space.
TLDR, an eldritch horror quest to rediscover humanity's origins, only to find out the planet is gone, reduced to nothing more than flying rocks. Happy ending.
Well, like this could be a cosmic horror. Yeah,
that'd be a bummerino of an ending.
Dang, that's just the opposite of Andy Weir. That is reading Andy Weir book and going, let's burn that, write something horrific. Nice. Didn't wow me. Didn't blow me away.
Yeah.
But it did have some elements there of, hey, you're going for horror. I'm not a biggest horror genre fan. If you pitched any horror to me, it's not going to be, oh, I have to read this horror book. But for what this pitch is saying and doing, I like that it includes that there's these creatures outside looming as well. So there's this greater, I guess the question comes down to you as well of why is Earth destroyed? Why is it left to just rubble? What are all these incomprehensibly sized creatures? What's going on here? What is
I'm trying
cosmic
to see
horror?
The interconnectedness of like how do these characters relate to the Eldritch Horror, that kind of stuff. Rather than it just and then it just being the ending is planet's gone.
Was it do we get character in here?
No, not really.
Yeah, not really. Yeah. So it's just more so the setting and the quest of the characters. We didn't get, hey, what's this character? We got the journey of whatever crews go in there. But yeah, I'm going to go 3.75 again. I really, nope, 3.5. I overdid it.
3.25, above average.
Okay, so we got a 6.75 with that one.
Yep.
But it looks like our winner of this episode, meaning we're going to have next episode where we see if one beats this, but we're going to give our winner, Girth Brooks, who got a 9.5 out of 10. I loved it. We want to read it one more time.
I will read it one more time for the people at home.
Yes. This is our winner, and Girth will be reaching out and sending the bookmarks to you.
Imagine a world where there is no armies. Any and all disputes between kingdoms are resolved through non-lethal single combat by each kingdom's champions. There are no battles between armies. The world sees no reason for excessive loss of life and is accepted as the way the world works, to the point where even the idea of armies and battles is a fallacy. That is, until one asshole in a kingdom far away decides he doesn't want to play by the rules. The main character would be a boy or young man who is working their way up to becoming the champion for the strongest kingdom in the land. And we follow his journey to becoming the champion, which happens because when he becomes next in line for the title, the current champion gets killed in what is the first ever recorded fatality in a duel. You know who did the killing? Yep. That asshole we talked about before. The asshole has become the champion of his kingdom and has gathered an army for the first time in history and plans to bring his lowly kingdom into power over all the others.
This is such a fun one.
Yeah.
That's so fun. Girth, thank you for that, Jim. That is so fun. And there were plenty of other ones, too. Who was the champion before? Judgmental.
Judgmental.
Great one. I think Mac was in the lead for a lot of that. But thank you all for those submissions. We'll be messaging you as soon as we can, Girth. Probably after this video, so you don't get it ahead of time. So you can get the tension there. Otherwise, we'll be going to part two shortly. You'll all see it next episode, though. But for this one, any final parting words, Rich?
Keep sending us your ideas. They're fun. You guys are like, man, the power of the internet. You guys are actually real good, real talented people.
Talented, yes. Thank you very much. And we'll see you shortly. Look, check the next one out, part two. All right, bye.
Bye, everyone.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.